From 5 to 5:30 here on The Beat with Straight Talk with DJ Hilson. It's an opportunity for you to ask your questions of the Muskegon County Prosecutor, talk about the current events of the day, and maybe even have a guest or two. So again, it's the second and fourth Tuesday of the month from 5 to 5:30 here on The Beat, Straight Talk with DJ Hilson. I look forward to hearing from you.
Live from the Mazer Wright Media Center, it's Straight Talk with DJ Hilson, your Muskegon County Prosecutor. Straight Talk with DJ Hilson, an in-depth discussion on issues that affect you and your community. Sparking conversation, opening dialogue, and breaking down barriers. Have a question about crime prevention, subpoenas, silent observer, or about the law? Call 231-722-8338. It's Straight Talk with DJ Hilson.
Good afternoon, Muskegon. DJ Hilson here at, live in the studio, and looking forward to today's discussion. I want to start off this afternoon recognizing some folks. I had the privilege of actually trying a case last week involving the individual that took a shot at the police officers over the, I guess it was early part of December. And you know, I got in preparation for that trial, I got an opportunity to meet a young man who was kind of right in the center of it from start to finish. And I'll tell you, I'm not going to use his name on the air, but he's 14 years old, and I want to recognize him for his bravery. And if you didn't follow the story or you didn't know about the entire trial, what you guys don't know is that this young man probably, well, I won't say probably, did save his mom's life for sure. And for a 14-year-old to keep his head cool and calm in a very volatile situation, you know, his stepdad is running around with three loaded guns and had already shot his neighbor, and it was not an easy situation. And this young man not only hid and protected his mom throughout this, because it was quite clear through the testimony that his stepdad was looking not only for police officers but for her. Not only did he protect her, but he also had in mind to protect there were some young girls that were having a party that night, a birthday party, and protect them and their mom. And I tell you, true, an unsung hero. I just was in awe listening to him tell his story to me and then testify to it. It was quite amazing. And in the same token, I have to give a shout out to the group of teenagers in Fruitport that, you know, basically heard the call for help and assisted a neighbor. And this is in reference to a current case that's going on in Muskegon. And I had a couple of guys break into a house, were stealing some of this lady's stuff. She happened to walk in, and one of the gentlemen was inside. She ran out screaming for help, and this group of teenagers stopped and literally surrounded this guy until the officers got involved. And I'll be honest with you, I mean, that to me, in both situations, you're talking about some real brave individuals. And not that I ask people to put themselves in harm's way, but these are two situations where we have young people, and this is why I wanted to highlight it first thing this afternoon. We have young people thinking of others before they're thinking of themselves, and to me that's fantastic, and that's the kind of mentality and the kind of attitude that I think that should be showcased, because that's the kind of thinking and mentality that really will move our county forward and into being safer, and move neighborhoods forward into being safer when young folks really take ownership in knowing what's right and doing what's right. So I wanted to spend the first couple minutes just singing both of those groups' praises and really commending them for what they did, because that was true courage and true bravery. Also reminding you that in order to call in and talk to me, the number here at the studio is 722-8338, 722-8338. Please call in. You know, I wanted to pick up where we kind of left off last time, and we were talking about witnesses and you know, that some of the things that I have at my disposal as it relates to dealing with those that feel it necessary to either threaten or intimidate a witness. And I spent some time this afternoon in preparing for today's program, just kind of reviewing the statutes that I have at my disposal. And, you know, through the graces of modern technology, I had them saved on my iPad. And just if you give me just a second here while I get to where I got to go. But certainly that has always been an issue. It was an issue when I was an assistant prosecutor. It remains an issue. And I think we had some discussion about this last time about, you know, fear of retaliation or fear of you know, no protection. And I want everybody to recognize and realize that there are a series of statutes that, as it relates to protecting witnesses. In particular, and I think I've said this, I don't know if I said this here, but I certainly have told, I've indicated this in the press, that all the statutes that relate to intimidating witnesses, are, and there's even a statute as it relates to retaliating after witnesses testify, they're all felonies here in the state of Michigan. And they all revolve around the idea that if you do anything to discourage or intimidate or harass a person from testifying in an official court proceeding, that's a crime. And I have in my as an assistant prosecutor in my career, I have charged folks with this statute when they have come after or done things to harass or threaten my witnesses. Because I take when it comes to preparing for trial or during an investigation, I take the protection of witnesses very seriously. And as I tell folks, I can't put a bubble around you and protect you 24/7, but I do have some arrows in my quiver, so to speak, to make sure that people understand that if you think that you're going to walk around and threaten somebody or intimidate them from testifying or participating, that I'm going to take that very seriously and charge you. And like I said, I have. And the nice thing about the way these statutes are written is that the court proceeding doesn't have to happen. If we can show that you are a potential witness in a potential court proceeding, that's good enough. And so it's not just that a case has been charged and you're a witness in the case. I can actually charge these statutes even if I know down the line, once we do charge the case, that you're going to be a witness in the case. So that covers that aspect of the investigations. And so, you know, certainly I wanted everybody to recognize and realize that I do have some, I do have these things in my arsenal to use. I have used them. I'm not afraid to use them. And to me, like I said, I mean, getting to justice, getting victims justice is probably the top priority and has been the top priority in my career and continues to be my top priority. And so I will do what I can under the law to make sure that we get the people that need to get forward and give the information and protect them as best as we can.
DJ, do the witness have to request protection?
No. I mean, all what I need and what I've always told, you know, when I prepare for trial and I sit down with witnesses and I talk to them and go through kind of what the trial process is and go through, you know, their statements that they made to the police, what I always tell them is I say, listen, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to pressure you or threaten you or do anything or say anything to scare you from testifying. And I always tell them up front, I say, listen, if that happens, do not hesitate to call our office. But most importantly, do not hesitate to call the police and make a report. Probably what would facilitate it, make it work faster is if you called the prosecutor's office so that we could connect your name to the particular case or investigation that you're involved in and then refer to the correct agency. And believe me, I make sure that the departments that are investigating these crimes or that are part of the trial or the investigation recognize and understand the importance of this, what I'll call side investigation as it relates to witnesses. And so I've had the state police investigate stuff. I've had local authorities investigate stuff so that I could turn around and issue these charges. And like I said before, I'm absolutely not afraid to do that because to me, I don't want anybody messing with my investigation or messing with my case. And when people feel that they want to do that, I'm going to make sure that I make them understand that that was a mistake.
Good. DJ, a couple of questions. I've been hearing that you have a new staff in the prosecuting attorney office. Any announcements you on that?
Oh, yeah. I have two new staff members. Both one started a couple weeks ago. The other one started last week. The one that started a couple of weeks ago, her name is Christina Johnson. She's a female. She has Michigan ties. She, in fact, graduated from Michigan State Law School, but went down to Miami and was working in the state's attorney's office down in Dade County, and was down there for about 5.5 years. Her family, she's got a sister that lives in central Michigan, and her mom lives on the east side of the state, and wanted to get back to family, and interviewed very well. She brings a lot of experience to the office, both in the district and circuit court level, and has fit in very well already, is doing very well in the office, and so I'm really excited about that. Last week, a gentleman by the name of Brandon Davis started, he brings to the table, he worked over in Wayne County, and for the last 3 years has been in the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office in their General Trials Division. He also brings some trial experience and has come over here and acclimated very well to the west side of the state. And, you know, again, brings some great experience to the office. Has got a great personality. Both of them have great personalities and have a desire to work in a prosecutor's office and a passion for it. And so they've melded and gelled with the veterans of the office very well and are doing a bang-up job already. So I'm really pleased that I was able to fill those voids with some really good, experienced people.
All right, you have a phone call. Caller, you got a question or comment for Prosecutor DJ Hilson?
Yes, hi. I was wondering, how do you feel about what happened last night at the robbery at the gas station downtown Muskegon, and what can be done to better protect these workers?
Good. That's a great question. You know, it's unfortunate that I'm not even going to say the city, but the society that, you know, we've got people that are actually trying to work for a living and because of whatever reason have to work those, what I'll call graveyard shifts in these 24-hour convenience stores. And, you know, there are certain protections in place, but, you know, you're still there. It's still late at night, and you're still susceptible to this. And certainly it's always troubling to me, and this was true as an assistant, but certainly as the prosecutor, that you know, you've got individuals that are trying to take advantage of that and put these clerks in really dangerous positions. And so, you know, like any armed robber, we take those very seriously. And it's my understanding that the police department did an excellent job in investigating that case. And, you know, I certainly commend those that work those shifts, and I know that they know the risks every night that they go to work. And you know, as far as protection goes, the easiest answer is to say we don't have 24-hour convenience stores anymore. And I don't know that from a business sense, I don't know if that's the right answer, but that certainly would open up the doors to protecting workers if you eliminated those late-night shifts. Because, again, you know, you're dealing with a time of night that there aren't very many people around, and typically you've got one, maybe two clerks working in the store, and you know, that doesn't bode well. The odds are stacked against you. Other than that, you know, I know most convenience stores have 24-hour surveillance video. Some stores have, you know, protection or glassed-in areas where the workers work so they don't have access to the public, or they can kind of lock themselves away from the public during those time frames. And certainly those are appropriate measures. But to me, you know, the easiest one is to say, hey, listen, we're not going to have 24-hour stores anymore. But, you know, I don't know that serves the community very well, but it certainly would protect the workers.
Okay, because I'm the sister of the girl that was robbed last night, and I just want to thank the police for doing such an excellent job taking care of this situation so fast, and all the prayers and love from the community. I've had people come up to me today that know me, that know that she's my sister, and I just want to say thank you all so much for the love, and God bless you all. Thank you. It's been really emotional today. She's only 26, has two girls, and, you know, like I said, her first thought was those babies last night when that happened. And I'm just so thankful for our police that was there last night,
well,
for taking care of so good care of her.
That's great to hear. I know that the officers and the department appreciates your praise because you know they work hard to make sure to serve and protect. And you know, having dealt with victims of armed robberies, convenience store victims, I mean, I certainly don't know what she's going through, but I certainly understand because those are not fun positions to be in. And I want you to understand and your sister to understand that the prosecutor's office will be with her every step of the way. Our victim witness people are fantastic when it comes to that. They are there for support, whether it be, you know, just being there in the court or offering outside assistance that she may need. So please let your sister know that she should use that part of the office. And believe me, nobody, she can call every day if she wants. We want to make sure that she's taken care of and that she understands every step of the process.
What are they planning to do to this guy?
Well, I mean, I would imagine that we'll end up charging him. Go from there. You know, once the charges are issued, the court process starts, and the first step in the process will be the preliminary examination, that may be the first part of the process where your sister may or may not have to testify. We'll just have to wait and see once he's arraigned and has a lawyer either hired or assigned to him what he decides to do with that process. I mean, certainly, if it does come down to that. You know, it's been the policy of the prosecutor's office for a long time, and I've continued that we try to meet or we do meet with victims so that they have some comfort and they get to know the prosecutor handling the case. And like I said, the victim unit is always there. And so that'll be the next step. And, you know, certainly if you or your sister have any questions, please call and we'll answer them.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate all the love and the prayers once again.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks. Have a good day.
You too.
231-722-8338.
Yeah, call in. You know, I'm anxious for your phone calls. You know, going back to the topic of witnesses and cases, and we touched upon this a little bit. You know, a lot of times, and I can certainly appreciate the frustration. When I go and talk and people ask, you know, what are you doing about this case or this investigation or what's happening? And in order to charge a case, in order to build a case, we have to have people come forward and actually testify or talk about what they did or what they saw, what they heard. Because unfortunately, I can't charge a case and build a case based on hearsay or street talk or guesses or conclusions. I need people that are actually going to step forward and be the brave and courageous soul to kind of get the truth out. So I just again remind folks that please don't hold back, don't lie, help us serve justice.
Caller, you're live with DJ Hilson, Prosecutor DJ Hilson. You got a question or comment?
Yes, I do. I have a quick question regarding the incident at Muskegon High School today. And I'm curious to know how those students could possibly be charged because they created an unsafe learning environment. And, it bothers me that students who call in a bomb threat could be charged with terrorism, yet we have young adults creating extremely unsafe learning environments in schools where people should feel safe. And, I'm not seeing too much being done to curb this type of behavior. And I just wondered what stance the prosecutor's office will take on these types of situations.
This voice sounds familiar, but I won't say your name on the air. I'll tell you. I had a meeting with the chief this afternoon before I came over here, and he was kind of filling me in a little bit on the details, and they're still kind of putting everything together, so I don't have the complete picture yet of what happened at the high school. But I think part of the responsibility of law enforcement and the prosecutor's office is certainly to send the message that we want to keep our schools safe. We want them to be learning environments, not environments where people are going to take out their aggressions on the people that, for whatever reason, they're having spats with. That's not the place for it. Not that there's any place for that, but certainly a school building is not the place for that. From my understanding, at least one of the individuals went to the youth home, and so we're in the process of waiting for the police to finish their investigation and turn that over so we can read it and decide what we're going to do with it. But certainly, I think it comes down to a cooperative effort between the schools and law enforcement to kind of figure out a way how best to handle that situation or similar situations, and how best to keep the schools as a learning environment and not a place to start fights and whatever else. Unfortunately for I won't speak for all law enforcement, because they do have school liaison officers, but from the prosecutor's standpoint, I'm not in the school building. The teachers, and that's why I would rely on communication from administration or teachers to kind of give us a heads up as to what's going on and continue that dialogue, because it's always been my position that we can work better together than it is trying to correct a situation that's already happened. So, I'm always more than willing, and you should know this, that I'd sit down with any administrator and discuss strategy.
Yeah, I totally believe that. I guess my question is, it's almost as if, the 300 and some other students that were in that building today, their safety keys were violated today. And I just, if this happened on the street just between two people, that's, obviously it's never okay, but you don't have all these other people affected. When you have that many people affected, they're creating an environment that's causing trauma. And it just seems as if, this fight happened today, it caused this trauma, this chaos, and tomorrow school resume as normal. And these kids will probably be back after a 10-day suspension. And to me, that's just too much. That's too much for any student to have to worry about when they go to school. And I guess I'm just wondering, is there anything that can protect children in school? I mean, I know if they fight in the bar or out in the streets, they can be charged with assault. What is there to protect these 300 other students?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know that I have the perfect answer to it. From my standpoint, it'll be enforcing the laws. Because you can get charged with punching somebody out in the street, you can still be charged with punching somebody in the school building. The location really doesn't make any difference. And like I said, I haven't had a chance to sit down and talk to the officers about this particular situation, or even read the reports yet, because they're not finished. And I'll sit down probably with my chief assistant, who's been in the juvenile court arena for most of his career, and we're going to figure out a strategy on how to send the appropriate message so that the students who weren't involved understand that they don't want to get involved in that kind of activity, and appreciate the fact that we are trying to do the best that we can to ensure that their learning environment is a safe environment. If there's a short answer to that question, that would be my answer to that, is that they understand that we're going to work within the parameters of the law, and there will be a consequence for this. And they understand that, there's a consequence for doing that. I'm not going to do that at school. And the other students who weren't involved recognize that we're taking it seriously. Because I'll agree with you. We want to make sure that those students understand that when they come to school, it's a safe and secure place, and they're there to learn.
Exactly. So, well, I appreciate you taking time. I know it's one of those days. It was a busy last night and a busy day this afternoon for law enforcement. So thank you for all that protect and serve, and thank you, DJ, for being a man of your word.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
I'm DJ Young. You have another caller going to line two. Caller, you're live. Prosecutor DJ Hilson, thanks for being patient. You got a question or comment for the prosecutor?
Yes, my name is Christopher Clark. I am the Muskegon Big Reds High School football team manager, and I have a good idea for the prosecutor's office to help out with Muskegon High School security and basically punishing these students that cause these fights.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Clerk. I'm all ears.
I came up with this idea that the prosecuting office and also Muskegon High of our offices of our teachers and principals and everything like that could get together, and they could put together like a community service of like 100 hours community service outside of the school to keep these kids from basically being expelled, or they could be forced to work with the janitors after school to clean up messes that they cause, whether it's in fights or whatever happens in the high school. And if they don't do it, then force them to go into the ROTC program to make them learn discipline. And if they wouldn't want to do that, then I'd say go on ahead and expel the students.
Well, you know, you raise an interesting point, and I'll dovetail what you're saying into what we're, you know, we're working on a solution for the incident that happened in Whitehall, the deflating of the bus tires. And, you know, I believe certainly that young people need to appreciate that there's a consequence for any bad decision that they make, that they have to recognize that. And I'll agree with you on the community service aspect. I think that giving back to the community does two things. One, you know, it's time from doing something that they probably want to do. Two, it's showing, and I'm hoping that it'll give them or make them appreciate the community that they live in, and why it's important to invest in the community by giving back to the community. And secondly, I think doing it in and around the school certainly sends a message to the rest of the students in the school body that, hey, listen, I don't want to be, you know, the guy out there raking leaves or doing whatever it is, you know, picking weeds in the school building, and all the other students are kind of walking by, and I won't say it becomes a showcase, but it's a showing of what can happen when you make bad decisions. Now, whether or not a school decides to expel, you know, typically we as an office don't get involved in those decisions. Certainly we listen to the school and we give the school's input. In fact, we've been working very closely with the Whitehall superintendent on that particular issue. But I'm certainly not going to dictate and tell them what to do. That's their job, just like I wouldn't want them to dictate and tell me what I need to do. But I think that your idea of an open dialogue is really important, because I'll go back to what I originally said, which is, you know, when we communicate with one another and we sit down and talk about it and come to a mutual decision as to what's best, in this particular case, what's best for the students of Muskegon High as a whole, I think everybody wins in the end. And so, you know, certainly if school officials want to sit down and talk about how to handle this particular recent situation, I'd be more than happy to do that. I mean, like I said, I think everybody wins in the end, and I certainly appreciate your thought on this. I mean, it's obvious you've taken some time and thought about it, and being a student yourself, I mean, I commend you on that, because that's good. I mean, you're thinking outside the box, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. And basically, with me being football team manager, I was team manager from 04 to 08 and then stepped down after the state championship season. And then I came back in 2010, and I'm still working with them now as an alumnus of the high school. Basically, for my football team, to keep them out of trouble, us coaches, we make the players do anywhere between 25 to 40 hours of community service. Otherwise, they don't get to be on the team. And I've noticed a drastic change in my players' attitudes, and they've stayed out of trouble a lot more often now, and I'm very proud of my players for that. And I'm thinking, hey, maybe my players could also help out with these students that have been getting into these fights, and show them the lesson of community service. And I was just saying that maybe the prosecuting office could also be a help on that, and just give the idea to the high school of the principals to either put them in the ROTC program as a punishment, or make them do the community service of 100 hours, or help the janitors after school. And then if they wouldn't want to do either one, then it's expulsion time, from as far as I can see it, because I'd like to be a peacekeeper of Muskegon High, which is what I was as a student, which I got a citizenship award all the way back in middle school, and also back in high school I was recommended for it, but I unfortunately didn't get the award. But I definitely would appreciate the input of the prosecuting office to give this to the high school of what these students can have as options.
Well, yeah, and again, I haven't had a chance to read the entire investigation yet, but, you know, certainly we'll assess it, and, you know, it depends on the egregiousness of the crime, too. I mean, and once we have a chance to assess it, I'm sure we'll seek the input of the school, and we'll talk about it, and we'll go from there. But I like the idea of peer role models. I think the more role models that peers have that are their own age, the better off we are. So, I mean, I commend the football team for doing that, and I think they should view themselves as peer role models, because they are. I mean, they're an elite group, and I hope they take that seriously.
Yeah, we make our players take it very seriously at MHS about discipline and being perfect gentlemen and getting their grades up and staying out of trouble. And basically this past few weeks ago, we had like 12 to 13 guys of the football team sign Division I and Division II letters of intent for college football. So they've been staying out of trouble, and I definitely applaud them for that. And I'd just like to see these other students see what my players have been doing and follow in their footsteps.
Fantastic. Well, hey, thanks a lot for the call, and appreciate you thinking like that.
Thank you very much, and I look forward to being more of a peacemaker to MHS as well.
Great.
Thank you, Colin. All right, DJ, going on to the other phone line. Caller, you're live on the beat with the prosecutor, DJ Hilson. Got a question or comment for the prosecutor?
Sure. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I was calling because of the new truancy laws that are going into effect, and I was wondering how our prosecutor felt with regards to upholding those truancy laws, which can lead to a loss of food for people on welfare for their families. There isn't really that level or ramification for anyone who isn't receiving food assistance. But the first move seems to be to address truancy at the high school through the removal of access to welfare benefits that include food. And I was wondering, with as violent as the school is, and the fact that bullying policies are years late in this county, and that most people recognize that bullying is an institutional problem more than it is the children that are in the environment, that it's the environment that needs the work, and I can validate that. At any rate, how does he feel about moving forward in prosecuting over the truancy laws when we're asking our children to go into war zones?
Well, your question is a couple of things. One, the truancy initiative that I talked about last time, and that we've been working on for the past, I'd say, 4 or 5 months, was in conjunction with the school, DHS, one of the things that I guess I want people to understand is that the prosecutor's office has zero power when it comes to determining whether or not somebody's going to lose their benefits. That's not my role. My role is not to make that determination. That has been, the governor has given that role to the Department of Human Services, and they make that decision. I don't have any input in that at all. So I want people to understand that, one, I'm not interested in taking people's food benefits away. Two, I don't have the power to do it. You talked about...
However, if a child is truant from high school, then truancy laws would apply to the family of the student, right?
Well, there's a truancy law that applies to parents, yes. Absolutely. There's a state law that says, you know, if there's evidence to suggest that a parent is not living up to their responsibility by making sure their student attends school, that we can charge them with the crime of truancy. Yeah, I agree with you on that. There's absolutely a law in the books that allows me to do that. But the way that our program is set up is that we, in working with all these outside agencies, including the Family Resource Center, Department of Human Services, Mediation and Restorative Services.
Yes, they're all on the letters that are going out to the community where they're taking the food out of the households because their children are intimidated and are victimized in our schools.
Well, you know, again, on a case-by-case basis, what the idea of the program is to give the families the help they need. If there's an issue at school, the schools have assured us that they're going to deal with those issues. If it's intimidation, if it's bullying, if it's a teacher issue, if it's a schoolwork issue, if it's a special needs issue, the schools are going to handle those, and they have handled them in the past. You know, for me, The idea was to create a program that would give the families the resources that they need in order to correct what's going on in the family, not to arrest people, not to put them in jail, not to take away their benefits. That's not the goal of this program. The goal of this program is to make sure the kids stay in school, they get an education, and...
So what is the goal of taking away their food assistance? Is that so that they have to do something to get their food? I mean, are you
maybe
you
did.
Food?
I guess
not you personally.
No,
but
yeah.
I mean, these new truancy laws that only apply to a certain group of people.
Well, they don't. They apply. Listen, ma'am. They apply to everybody. The truancy laws apply to everybody. What you're focusing in on is that the governor has given the Department of Human Services the power to suspend somebody's food assistance if they desire. There was no guidance as to how many days they had to miss in order for that to happen. He just gave the power to the Department of Human Services to suspend food assistance to families who have kids who are chronically truant. And I can tell you from talking with the director, Jane Johnson, she does not take that responsibility lightly. In fact, you know, we talked at great length of the fact that the whole idea was not to take food off the table. In fact, I know of no case since we started this program where that has happened.
Well, there's two of them that I could note right now. And letters are coming out into my community, which does have a good amount of need and a good amount of families that are on assistance. Letters are coming out now, and you're right. They have every agency's name on them that's involved with going through this process for truancy. But the underlying question is, if we know that the schools are not functioning safely, and we do know this, I mean, people throw their hands up at it, but we do have knowledge that the schools aren't safe and that there's a lot of bullying going on. You have a lot of children who are victimized inside of these schools. Now, I wouldn't want them defending themselves to be charged with a crime. I'm kind of leery of having a lot of legal anything around the school because we haven't done the first part of trying to address the environment, the actual school. This is something that we pushed all in on these buildings. I meet a lot of unhappy children who feel very unsafe at school, and they think of it as their job, that they have to go to the hard, terrible, we get treated like prisoners' place, so that our parents will be able to feed us. Even though we're hiding under our desks, we're trying to avoid fist fights, all of that, you know. So, I mean, it's an incredibly harsh environment. And then to add the pressure to a child that they could go hungry if they don't go into that building is an incredible amount of pressure to put on a young person.
Well,
I don't know who they're trying to pressure with that piece of legislation, but it effectively abuses children.
Well, all I can say is that if there are issues at the school, those issues are properly addressed with the MAISD, the superintendent, the principal. If there's an assistant principal, the assistant principal. You know, that is the avenue to address those issues. You know, unfortunately, the governor has given schools a mandate to have an anti-bullying policy, but he hasn't made any anti-bullying laws for us to use. So, I have to follow the law that the legislature gives to us. Now, that's not to say that, you know, when I go and I talk to schools, and I talk to a lot of schools, I talk about, you know, the effects of bullying and the ramifications of making those decisions, because sometimes that stretches outside the school walls and gets into the cyberbullying area, and there I do have some angles or some laws at my disposal that I can use, and I've told kids that I would use those in particular as it relates to kids picking on other kids. But you know what you're talking about is if there are issues in the schools, the parents should be addressing those with the administration of the schools. And I guess you and I are going to disagree on this idea that we're putting pressures on kids to go to dangerous environments because they're worried that the food is going to be taken away. I disagree with you on that.
Think that that's a reality with these letters moving out towards these households?
I don't think that's a reality. No, I really don't. I, I, you know, and that's okay. I mean, you and I will disagree on that, because that's not the point of the program. The point of the program is to offer a hand of assistance.
Well, where does the hand of assistance begin?
It begins in the school with the Family Resource Center, which is in every school district. It begins with parents, if there are issues, to reaching out to the school system, because there are resources available. You know, I guess one of the pieces we're forgetting here is that parents just can't throw their hands up. They need to take an active role in their students' lives, and if there's an issue at school, they need to be a parent and address it.
Wouldn't all parents need to do that?
Absolutely. I'm a parent. I've got three kids of my own. Two of them are in school. If there was an issue at school, I would immediately address it. I would not wait or keep my kids from school. I would immediately address it. So.
Well, thank you for your answer.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you for calling. I guess we take one last caller. Is that okay?
That's fine.
I know you're going over.
That's okay.
Going to the phone line. Caller, you live with Straight Talk with DJ Hilson, prosecutor and attorney. You're live.
How you doing, PA? This is Commissioner Nash.
Good.
And I was given a call in because, first of all, I wanted to congratulate yourself, 103.7, and our prosecutor, DJ Hilson.
Thank you.
Because this is unprecedented to... have a prosecutor from Muskegon County come to, you know, an urban radio station to be able to connect to the community. And I want to commend both of you guys for working together to make this happen for the community.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm going to put you on the hot spot there, prosecutor. Actually, I was just cooling off, too.
Thanks, Charles.
Well, I got a couple good questions for you, and you know, I just wanted you to answer them, you know, the best way you can.
Absolutely.
There's been two major concerns, I believe, and I'm just going to say, you know, from especially the urban community. Number one is, I know there's always been concern of having adequate African-American support in the prosecutor's office. And I just wanted you to be able to address that, you know, the best way you can, so that people can get a good understanding of your office and makeup, and if or what kind of changes you would or could make if necessary. Also, I know that you had a good campaign that really sparked having some good support for our youth. And I just wanted you to maybe somewhat expound on some ideas and some plans or some things that you may be currently doing and some things that you may be looking forward to do for the community in the future.
All right. Well, the answer to your first question, clarify that for me. Are you saying support from the African-American community as a whole? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, well, the first question was really regarding, and I'm not just speaking of just prosecutor's office,
yeah.
But I know in the county itself, people have continuously complained that we do not have enough people that look like us in the community, in the county, and even those that we do have, they never seem to go past entry level.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just wanted you to be able to expound on that, you know, coming from your office.
Sure.
On any direction you have on that, or any changes you may be looking at or making, how would you address that?
Well, you know, Charles, I'll tell you. We talked at the beginning. Paul had asked me the question about recent hires, and I explained that the two recent hires that I hired in the office, and you know, the Brandon Davis happens to be an African American, and. From my standpoint, I didn't hire him because he was an African American. I hired him because he's got a great personality. He's got great experience. He to me, on a first impression basis, I believed when I first interviewed him that he was going to be a perfect fit for the office, and that instinct has held true. And I didn't publicize the fact that he was an African American because it wasn't a political decision on my part. It was what was best for the office. I guess to answer your question, I have made strides and, in fact, hired him, and he got hired based on his experience. He wasn't hired as an entry level. He was hired as an APA 2. And so, you know, I certainly recognized that he had some talent. I recognized that he was going to be a fit, and I made sure that I made him an offer that he couldn't refuse. Bottom line. you know, but, you know, I had that question asked of me, and you know, it, really the bottom line is it comes down to qualified candidates, and I don't care what race you are, I don't care what color of skin you are, I don't care what gender you are. If you have a passion for this job, if you have a passion to, and one of the questions we asked all our candidates was, hey, listen, we're very active in the community. You know, would you be a part of that? And the two people I hired said, absolutely, we'll be a part of the community because of the community we live in, that was really important. So that was the basis of those decisions. So I guess to answer your question, I've made a very positive step in that direction. To answer your first question, the second question as it relates to the youth, let me just
interject really quick because I know it's not something that you would publicize just because I know you and your demeanor, but that is some information that the community does need to know and understand. And I again want to commend you because you're taking a leadership role in that with the county, and I think it's a good example of that. You know, even though it's not about him being of color, but we do know that with this community having a good makeup of people within these departments that looks like our community, it helps our community that much more. Not only that, but it helps your office be able to work a little bit better and function better. So I know those are some attributes that will probably be, you know, definitely enhanced with having, you know, the diversity involved.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, as far as diversity goes, the other hire was a female, and so I now have four female lawyers in the office. So I mean, you know, it's a group of people that have shown that they can work very well together and keep the goal of our office in mind, and that's what I'm looking for.
Great.
Is that it?
Well, he had a second question.
We're running out of time.
We're running out of time, Charles. I mean, you know, geez, I got a Cub Scout meeting to go to tonight. So,
all right.
Thanks, Commissioner, for calling in.
Right. No problem. We'll catch you next time.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Take care.
All right. Well, hey, thanks, folks. You know, this is the absolute reason why I decided to do this radio show is to have this kind of dialogue. And you know, as I've said, even on the campaign trail, I mean, there's going to be topics and issues that we're going to disagree on. But I respect everybody's opinion, and I hope and appreciate everybody respects mine. That's the way our society works. We're not all going to agree, and that's okay. I mean, I'm fine with that, and I hope everybody's fine with that too. But you know, this again is the reason why I'm doing this program. Is I love the phone calls. I love touching on, you know, what's hot and heavy for the day. I mean, the fight at Muskegon High School happened this afternoon, and so I appreciate the phone calls on that. And certainly, truancy is near and dear to my heart. I want our kids to get the education. And certainly I want to be a part of a team that creates a safe environment for their learning. And you know, whether we've got a little work or a lot of work to do, I'm not one to shy away from a challenge, and I intend on continuing to roll up my sleeves and doing what I can that's best for the community. And so, again, I appreciate all the phone calls and really appreciate everybody's input and discussion. It's great. The one last thing that I'd be remiss, because I promised my friends at the Heights Optimist Club that I would say, because we had our meeting today, is that tomorrow, one of the things why I like the Heights Optimist Club and Optimist Clubs in general is that their focus is on youth. And they do a lot of youth outreach. And so part of what they do to help fund that is they have fundraisers. And tomorrow is the third annual pancake dinner for the Muskegon Heights Optimist Club. It's tomorrow from 5 to 7. It's at the Muskegon Heights High School in Tiger Way. From the talk to this afternoon at the meeting, there's pancakes, there's sausage, a lot of friendly, smiling faces ready to serve you. So it's from 5 to 7 at the Heights High School. Tickets are $6 for adults, $3 for children, and any child 5 and under is free. I know that they'll be selling tickets at the door. Please go out and support not only the Heights Optimist Club, but support their efforts in outreaching to the youth, because it's folks like this that are reaching out that hopefully will start reaching and reaching out to these youth and making them understand what it is to be a citizen and to do the right thing. So, again, thanks. Paul, hey, have a great, since I won't see you, have a great Easter, a good holiday, and I look forward to our next show.
All right. Thank you, Prosecutor.
You're welcome.
It's the station that cares. 103.7 The Beat.
This hour WVS programming is brought to you by Fountain Funeral Home. Fountain Funeral Home presents an insurance and estate planning seminar. Saturday, March 30th,